Blog Talk Radio.
Acknowledgement of the working class around the world. It's also more fanciful because of where I am in North America. The lead up to May 4th and the reference to Star Wars, may the 4th be with you. Yeah, excellent. But if you're with our American friends, you'll know that together with friends and celebrate. These are a couple. It's packed full. It doesn't diminish what the seriousness of what's going on. But it is the way that we deal with the gravity of life here in North America. It is uncanny in a way. You might think that we would be wearing our suffering as widow's wreaths for the rest of our days, but certainly not. These events, getting together, socializing, is a celebration of the point of why we tolerate and put up with the imperfections and the inequities of the world around us, and yet have the resilience to celebrate. Whether you sit down with your family with a hot dog and a beer at a ball game, or you've got a good ticket to a football match, a soccer match, or you're out there batting a ball around with your buddies, or on the golf course, heading out. There's so much variety, even knowing that it's not accessible to everybody, but everybody has a way of finding that success. So that celebration, to be content, to be frivolous, to step away from the madding crowd is, as the writer has reminded us, The I don't know today. Can you see, can we say that masonry was and is the same stock as it was? Did we serve the same purpose that it did hundreds of years ago? Well, I think in some ways, yeah, yes, in some ways, and in other ways. I think if one of my, a very lovely Mason has sat down with me and said, you know, if you think about it, if Brother Mozart was to walk into our lodge today and look around and just listen, sit in the back bench and just listen, what would he make of it? Well, and I thought, my goodness, you know, he would he be picking up all the pettiness and the turmoil? Would he see the slipped word in ritual? Oh, he might. But he also might be just amazed at the fact that it, first the lodge opened, that it was somewhat familiar to what he went through, and that it has purpose. And still, hundreds of years later, it has purpose. He might know too that you, if he has a chance to sit down and talk with the members present, he will know that there is a striving. There is a striving to get it, to work, to get together, and he will know how difficult that is because he's a good man and a good Mason. He will know that it's not as simple as writing it on a page and saying, "Here you go. Follow it. This isn't something. You don't discover inner awareness by command. That's of anybody. Do we think that for a moment the sense of imagination would be lost to Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart? I can't imagine that being in a lodge that he attended. I can't. It's too fanciful, but I know there are people that have, that can walk through the streets that he walked down, that can visit, get a ticket for the theater where he performed. So it's, if I'm thinking about what embodies masonry, it's not this, not so much the celebrity in the man, it's the man in celebrity. He became quite renowned because of our appetite for talent, and because he could express an emotion in a way that hadn't been done, that was unique. He was unique, and he was a member of a unique organization, us, our fraternal organization. Now, that's not to say when I wear the apron, I'm feeling that I'm somehow transformed, and I'm rubbing shoulders with the rich and famous, because that would make them and me seem shallow. No, the fanfare is kept for the new boy, and the effort in the talent and the imagination, it all comes into play when we work with the ideas of masonry and this beautiful response, this wonderful responsibility of passing it on to next generations. Look at it's like you don't get to do that based on fanciful, frivolous, corner cutting measures. That's where the notion of merit is in play. For you and I to pass on anything to the next generation amounts to an expression of our capacity, and you know, it's vast. So we'll be challenged before we sit back on our heels and think that masonry is about opinion, that we've stopped thinking, we've stopped dealing with fact and reasoning, and drawn a line and said, this is the opinion that I'm going to use moving forward. Well, you know how limiting that is, because as soon as we start to do that, it interferes with the expression and exploration of the people that we're trying to instruct or teach or help them to discover. And the way that we do that is by showing them. We're showing them not the answer, but the process. This is the process to get to that end. And it has to be shown, because it's unique. Where are you going? If I pull out a book, and rightfully so, there's a lot of information available. It's a bit arcane and, well, tremendously esoteric. Who would bother? Yeah. But if you pull out a book, it doesn't really tell us. It doesn't express that the experience, the product of experiencing masonry. And I say that knowingly, because the more you sink your teeth into it, and that goes along your, it's not, I don't think it's a path. I think it's just a way of addressing the questions that you have, the individual has. Then we can look in the mirror and say, hey, has it changed me today? Has it changed me now? Has it changed me today? Will it change me tomorrow? Well, we're... I'm kidding a little bit, because we're saying that it is transformative, but in so many different ways. My goodness, it would be like me taking a blue dye and having all of us put our finger into it. Well, the feeling is going to be, you know, it was the temperature wet. Was the temperature of the wetness, was it warm or cool? What did it feel like? But at the end of it, when we pull our finger out, it's going to be blue. It's going to be stained blue. So somebody can say, yeah, everybody has to have a blue finger. Well, yeah, fine. But you're sort of missing the point. It's like everybody has to hit an A note. Okay, we can all hit an A note, but can you attach them to the symphony? Isn't that where the party is? You can teach me to roll a golf ball across the green, but can you teach me how to analyze the golf course and enjoy? And yeah, and then, you know, what do you find? It's that mental challenge you take on with yourself. You know, calm, focused. The same thing you find with sailing. When you're out there, and all of a sudden it's like this ethereal kind of experience, where you're moving along with the speed of the wind, and it's or weightlifting, where you realize that the grunt work and it is about all of that is about concentration and focus. Ah, yeah, you didn't think it would be anything else. Commitment. But now humanity, created this process, and it's very unique and interesting process, and it projects these benefits. Now, it doesn't tell us that, doesn't approach this as a doctrine. Do this, then that. You know, it's not causality. This is exploration. Here's the map. Here are some of the challenges. Once you have finished these challenges, come and talk to us. Well, if you've ever, you know, you hear the effervescence and the energy of a young man doing something, and that's wonderful, you know, that's enthusiasm. You want to encourage that. We don't want to damp that down. We want to help channel and show him ways to enhance the experience based on our own. Not to say this is the way, although some coaches will try and do that, but always to help the younger person, the athlete, go a step beyond what the coaches can do. Isn't that the point? Yeah, of course. The the master artist, the master craftsman, wants his apprentice to go beyond, take the talent one moment beyond what the teachers are able to do, and contribute, you know. And then, the pride that the mentor feels, knowing that his belief in his student was well placed, and if not, it's not on the student, it's on him, huh? It's on the challenge that it was. It's on the teacher, that he takes on that responsibility, and that in some way it's his failing. He ought to have, that's old school, isn't it? He ought to have known how to teach respect. And how do you move a student and inspire? You begin by listening and respecting him. It's not by ordering and telling. When somebody is awkward and standing at the door of the lodge, what's the first thing that comes to mind is the same thing that your grandma would do in the farmhouse. You put on a cup of tea, bring out a cup of tea and a biscuit, and sit the person down and help them to feel comfortable. Get to know them and let them get to know you, back and forth, back and forth. At least that's where, that was my early experience as a boy. And that still goes on. People, it's kind of fascinating that people come from all over the world to experience that. And yeah, that hospitality, it's wonderful. But masonry, huh, we did that. We don't lose track of our manners. It's help the person feel comfortable. He's new and doesn't know. So what do? We don't hang the person out to dry and sit there. We're not the impotent parent that thinks that children are just stupid little adults. It's that they need to be encouraged to explore, and we can give them the framework. This is what happens if you put your finger in hot water. But eventually, you know, you have to find that for yourself. Hopefully you're not going to burn the tip of it, but ride the bike. We can show you, and we'll give you the mechanics. We'll teach you the mechanics, but ultimately you need to feel that for yourself. Mom and dad can't do that. The trusted adult can't do that. You have to do that for yourself. You find that balance, and what happens? Whee! You find the balance. It's wonderful. It's magic. There's so many little tips and tricks that you learn from somebody that passes them on. If you're observant, not everybody is observant in the same way at the same time or all the time. Sometimes it's the darndest things that resonate, things that stick. And if you're listening to this around the world, you'll have those incidents that just stick in the mind and fulfill that question. If I ask you about the most meaningful experience that you've had in a lodge, you'll have each. There's not one. You'll have your own. Is it that private conversation with the ancient old guy? Is it watching the keenness and excitement of the young fellow, the young mason, being at the altar as he's finished his altar, and the master turns and says, you know the line. The moments that matter could be the travel where you're alone you're together and you're alone, but you're with a whole lot of people. It's like being alone in a crowd. And so what has that impact? Is it something that you read late one night where the penny dropped and you think, oh, that explains. And then the next morning you wake up with another question. There it is. And then you look around and you notice that some fellows are tired, they're fatigued by the questions. Some have not asked the questions and they wonder, my goodness, why are you so much enthusiasm? Why are you going into that? Why? Who cares about metaphysics? Who cares about alchemy? You know, well, some do. That's the beauty of the craft. Eh? It opens. It's wide open. There's a place for you in it, in the study. Now, the framework, you take it as far as your ability allows, and then you hope that Freemasonry will be the push or the prompt, the challenge to go a little bit further than you think you can. Make that effort. Convince yourself that your demon is that hesitance, and that instead of assuming that you can't do something, put it as a question, can I do this? And stop the assumptions and get real. Can I do it if I try? Well, there's no way of answering that until you try. And is it full of challenge? Absolutely. It wouldn't be worth doing if it wasn't full of challenge. So very soon I'm going to be talking to a group of brethren. Some of them in the room think that Freemasonry is a club. And that's a reasonable thing to think these days in materialist North America. But there's evidence in my head that teaches us that it's that plus so much more. So much more. It's like comparing a hospital to a hotel. Yeah, okay. You get very expensive care, but you're not going to find that kind of intensely trained staff running around a hotel. And the food is always better at a hotel, I hope, but not necessarily healthier. Anyway, I hope you're well out there. It's been a week, and what a week of the world. And we hear, you know, if there's been a doubt about the nature of existential threat, we hear people saying, well, I'm going to, you know, be careful. I could just annihilate all of us, you know. That's not going to be without consequence, and it's certainly not going to stop what we've got to do. It's just not. It's we have purpose, and in the meantime, we're going to move on. Absolutely, we always have, and a threat. Well, we've been threatened before. Will it happen again? Yeah, and it certainly will. And not for the last time. So sit back. Oh, a shout out. I get to do a shout out before we go on here. And we're being joined by, what is this? This bunch from New Zealand? What? What in the world? You're claiming that you're on the top of the world now and everything has been upside down. Yeah, okay. Well, hello, and my goodness, we have listeners from China. Yes, this is the first. China and Oman and Iran and Turkey and Latvia and Netherlands and United Kingdom and Ireland and the United States of America and Canada. Wow. I don't know if I've ever seen this kind of mix before. Anyway, who can I comfort taste? Sit back, and I hope you enjoy the program today. Really interesting poetry, Thomas Carlyle poetry, and the music. Well, I'll let you judge for yourself. Thank you. Interesting music, and he's a musician that, as you hear, he hums along, he sings along with it, and, you know, the engineers go crazy trying to filter that out, but he's not the only one. You can hear in different recordings, you hear that happening, just can't contain themselves, then. Can't contain themselves. It took a bit of thought to put together the commentary for today, and always just to try and initiate a bit of thinking. Without knowing whether or where your focus is, and I began to get very self-conscious about that. Oh my goodness, you know how? And then you realize how would you possibly, if that was the criteria for communicating? Like, I can't talk unless it's optimal conditions, and I have undivided attention. Well, that's a little bit of ego gone wild, isn't it? Here, paths or connections. See how I've done with this. Even if we never played an instrument, the music of life would continue to play on inside us. Circumstance, or what we make of it, the things and people that influence, those are part of the journey. Maturity and development is also not independent of influences, and yet we aspire. It is not what we have or are. It is what we make of what we have or are. To that, I would add a goal. At the end of your path, will you know who you are, and will you have found contentment? All right. The world includes dystopic attitudes. But what matters is what you believe. The goodness of people makes us happy. We feel safe when we are with them. Finding a silver lining on a cold, wet, bleak day happens. It wouldn't matter if those days happened once, but they repeat until we pay attention to the mood it draws out. The mood employed by painters and poets to express depths of our condition, so familiar and yet unspoken. Rather than hide from them or ourselves, our culture has chosen to understand and explain. If only the outcomes were simplistic and joyous, but that would be indulgent, wouldn't it? Life has beautiful moments, punctuated by sadness and tension. The sunshine coming through the trees are somehow more appetizing when they happen against the gray background. If only the frailties of the human condition didn't occur, we wouldn't understand what we see and think and do always has more than one meaning. It makes us look forward to our next encounter with curiosity. Mariano Lucano. Nice quintet. Beautiful. Beautiful. Go waltz for my hero. It's can be daunting, huh? Masonry. You think, you sit back and reflect for a moment on even your first ritual and this whole process of obligations done quite seriously. And I don't know about you, but I wasn't prepared for that. I had no idea. It was amazing. And this whole, and the metaphors, you become aware all of a sudden. It's like you become aware, but you're not aware. You're trying to process it, and it takes a while. And then another really interesting idea comes along, and you're still trying to process the last. And then it just catapults forward. Well, that's the kind of thing that prompted me to look at the work of this poet today. I've grown to appreciate poetry more and more. The more, and I owe that. I'm indebted to Masonic Effects because I set up this format many years ago, and I've had the opportunity to share with you some. I'm probably stuck around this whole notion of romanticism. You know, 16th, 17th century processes going on where you begin to look at nature and the inner expression and then write it and then put value to it. This guy, Thomas Carlyle, is the poet today, but it's always about leading into the detail. And these weren't frivolous people. These weren't silly people. At least the ones that survive. I know, I hear, and I know in Grand Lodge of Sweden, for example, you're expected, I believe it's between your first and second degree, you're expected to create poetry and to perform it. And it's not something that you want to take lightly because you're going to be judged on it. How much effort? How much thought? Do you take it seriously? And it's not like, oh, gee, I don't like that. It's like, well, tough. You don't like it. This is about commitment. Huh? This is about getting it. This is something that the group needs. This is for the greater group. And your opportunity to, and what were you looking at when they do that? You can tell they're looking for inspiration. Were you inspired by this task? And did you apply that inspiration to the work? Nowhere along the line are we looking for somebody to declare all of their inadequacies or the feebleness of their own temperament. No. You do that yourself. You make yourself look foolish at your own way. You set up your own limits. This is opportunity, and hopefully you'll have a mentor or a teacher that will whisper that to you. This is opportunity and let's see what you can do with it. Now, speaking of opportunity, let's talk about this poet. And then we can get into the kind of detail, a way of expressing something that you wouldn't necessarily have immediately thought of. So it's like that you're being taught. We are being taught. We're being reminded that melody, whether it's a chord played by Bach or Montserrat Caballas hitting the notes with such purity and such emotion. Mm. Beautiful, beautiful voice. This making of life life's opportunity, looking at the detail that most people notice. You and I do this all the time. We turn on the radio and we hear poetry set to music. And it's around us all the time, except, oh my, we wouldn't dare want to elevate you and say, here is poetry set to music. No, we wouldn't. We have to try and limit your ability. We don't want you thinking that you're in any way capable. No, that doesn't serve our purpose here. Carlyle here, the second son of James Carlyle. His dad was a mason by trade and later a farmer. And he developed, if you study early development of religion, Calvinist convictions, very strong. So, all of that, all that goes with that. Yes, yes. And and his way of thinking and his way of life had an effect on Thomas. When Thomas grew up, and he was very fortunate, he was very devoted also to his mother. They had 8 brothers and sisters, and very strong family ties. He's very, very fortunate. For somebody that didn't grow up without that, you appreciate it. My family tie is the joy of my brother. It's just a love for my brother, yeah. But he went away and attended a village school, and then he was sent to at an academy, and he was beaten up. He was bullied. Ah, I love that, eh? Yeah, the powerful. And then he began reading and turned inward, as a lot of bullied kids tend to do. I wish bad things for the bullies, but that's not Masonic. But his father had always intended that the boy would go into the ministry. And as Thomas grew, he became doubtful. He wasn't quite what he had in mind, but he had an aptitude for mathematics. Yeah. And so he got a teaching position in Annan, and then he went on to another school in Kirkcaldy, and where he met this mystic, this Scottish preacher, Edward Irving, and he became one of the few men to whom Carlyle gave complete admiration and affection. And as he said, but for Irving, I had never known what communion of man with man means. Agape, yeah? Yeah. And he became, Irving went on to be quite a famous, and his notoriety brought him to, his skill brought him to London. Anyway, this is the kind of fellow that was paying attention and absorbing. And it was to be like, if I wrote your biography, there are things that influenced you and inspired you. And we write that. It's not exactly clear that everything was as he experienced it. So he's extrapolating. It's like, you hear me doing that here, and I'm sure you do that as well. And not nearly as much as I do. I know you're quite clinical and factual. But violence was certainly a characteristic of Carlyle's tortured and as it's described, defiant spirit. And he began, when things were going really rough, he began to study German, and it remained the literature he admired most. And for Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, especially, had the greatest reverence. Yeah, not bad company. And then the history is well worth a look. I'm going to share with you a beautiful little piece that was taught to me back in the day. I don't think fire had been invented, and Prometheus had not given us that note, and I don't think we had developed the wheel back at Alexander, my professor, just a charming, brilliant Alexander Brody, brilliant, lovable, the kind of professor that you would just follow. He dedicated himself He demanded a lot, but he was so dedicated to his students. Respect him. And he taught us how to respect ourselves as learners. There. Today. This is the poem today. And you may have heard it. So here hath been dawning another blue day. Think will out, let it slip useless away. Out of eternity, this new day is born. Into eternity at night will return. Behold, it aforetime no eye ever did. So soon it forever from all eyes is hid. Here hath been dawning another blue day. Think will thou let it slip useless away. Simple little song, eh? Simple little tune, simple little poem. Here it is. What are you going to make of it? Waste it? Do something with it? That slight effort to improve over yesterday? There's a charming Masonic capability. just so happens we can talk about influences here from the past. Let's connect to keep an eye on what's happening around us. And I think it's only in hindsight that we can determine what has influenced us and in what way, of course. Because we're processing it, you know, we're trying to make sense of what's going on around us with whatever little bit that we perceive. It's like the idea of searching out the truth. We've talked about this before, but is it better to, is the truth actually a strong belief? And and you think about it, is it a strong belief in something? And you say that's true. Is that belief based on a totality or a duality, or is it based on a sliver, a small aspect of what was going on, of information that for whatever reason just came to you in front of you, to your mind's eye? Can we even determine what the truth is unless we understand whether we're talking about our beliefs strong held and partial or total, and or are we creating this false confidence that when we're speaking about truth, we know that it's not belief. Period of enlightenment, the Renaissance, the people that are coming out of their graves from the 15th century, aren't they? Just what in the world? I thought we had this over with. Let's move on. Here in the history that we're looking at is like a doppelganger. We're looking at the history because it's so beautifully documented in the Netherlands, and to tell us something about what was going on out of London, out of the city, and out of masonry at the time. And then we find it's not just an attitude out of London, as if London put an indelible stamp on masonry, which it didn't. We know better than that. We know that Scottish Masons were quite formidable in their approach to the craft, as were the Irish, and as were the French, and as were the, what would they be called then? Czechs? No. Slavs? No. The good men of Prague. Yeah. We have, we think these are folks that lived through revolution. We pay a price for protections, but in a couple of ways. Not always obvious, but we do pay a price for the protection that we live under. And it's a formidable army, a formidable force that protects us, our way of life, so that we can live accordingly, according to our beliefs. But here we are talking and we're learning about the effects with all the hindsight, even our own. But the reflection is that there were protests going on. This is a period after London, after 1787. And so there was an outbreak of revolutions in Western Europe that went on for a couple of years, 1887 to 89. And the Dutch Revolution, 1747, restored the state as the strength of the state, but it extended into radical protests against the corruption of the Republic. And they found out people conducting business thinking, well, it's nobody's notion or nobody's business but our own. Well, people didn't agree with that, obviously, and it doesn't play well today. These protests were violent in Amsterdam, 1748, just went at it. And one of the leaders of the radical movement, called the Dolistenenwegen, was Rousse de Missy, the founder of Freemasonry in Amsterdam in 1735. This wasn't a guy that sat on his coattails. He was out there saying, we have a point. And it wasn't curtailed because, and I think, the more we try to define Masonry for somebody else, the more we limit it. Because we when we're defining it, we're putting in our own bias, our own talents and the limits of our knowledge. And I tend to think that Masonry exists outside of all of that, outside of that. So here, we live with that now. We have so many different variations and interpretations that we live under, and they are a bias. They are limiting because Freemasonry is not defined by the opinion of some one person. That's where we can roll up our sleeves and look at what influences us, what laws are in effect. Do we start with, justice or truth or observation or experience? What do we, practical, do we learn about virtue? How do we learn that? What is it? Happiness, the redefinitions. So put a pin in that. We'll come back to that. But in response to the confusion provoked by the French invasion of Zealand, which in turn prompted the sudden restoration of the state, the Stadtholderate, Rousset, working in the service of Bentinck, contemplated in 1748 bringing out a new edition of the French text of John Locke's Two Treatises of Government. Presumably, the edition was meant to justify the revolution, just as it was believed Locke's text had justified the revolution of 1688 over half a century earlier. Worth a look. Go ahead and take a look. Brilliant, brilliant essay. But we see that Locke's ideas on government may have been put to other uses by the Masonic Brethren. In 1755, they attempted to reconstitute and revitalize their lodge. And in that same year, Rousset and his publisher and Masonic brother Johann Schröder finally brought out the new and slightly altered edition of the French version of the two treatises. The one project fed into the other. Rousset's dedication to an idealized version of English constitutional government found expression both in his work as a journalist, translator, and editor, and in his leadership of the lodge. In 1749, Rousset's lodge, named at the time Lodge de la Paix, had been closed down by the authorities. Their actions cannot be separated from the events of the previous 2 years. But 1748, Rousset had become an agent out of control. He allied himself with rebellious artisans and small shopkeepers in Amsterdam, who believed that the revolution had not gone far enough. Their demands ranged from an abolition of various privileges and monopolistic practices of the oligarch regions to an assault on a monopolistic economic practice, namely the privileges of the guilds. On this last point, the movement was by no means united. What evidence we have suggests that Rousset sided with the more radical fringe of the Dolisten, with the advocates of a free market in wages as well as offices. Among the more radical demands of the Dolisten that command our attention are their progressive advocacy of free market principles, industry, not simply trade, as the basis of economic life. The application of mechanical principles and practices to manufacturing and the harnessing of scientific knowledge as promoted in the scientific academies. Well, my goodness. Isn't this exactly what we're talking about today? We're still talking about it. Isn't it? The so-called free market and the managed market where there's protections and barriers and trade barriers and in order to preserve certain industry within nations because of this fear that the most powerful have an advantage and they will use that advantage to their purpose by exploiting whatever else is out there. Son of a gun. And what do we make of our brother, the person that started the first lodge in Amsterdam? Apparently, I don't know this, we're reading this, so you could say it's fairly qualified by the legitimacy and authenticity of this professor, he sided with the radical element that wanted to go further to challenge the managed economies and the people that were profiting from it. So they were looking for more equality, weren't they? More access. Seems altogether simple. Well, I see that we're at the end of our program again. Hard to believe it slips by so quickly. What we learn here is that nothing is as it appears. And the rock song told us words often have two meanings, two or more. Events often have two meanings, and the meaning may rest in the eye of the beholder. Maybe an opinion or taste. There's no accounting for taste, as the Greek philosophers have been teaching us for quite some time. And it is our condition. If we thought that we're stuck, well, I think, there's no... We don't have the capability of turning our clock back, and we have the advantage and disadvantage of recollections about what was going on then. But the more we learn, the more variation, the more different aspects that we learn over time, I would hope that we're finding an unvarnished history. And even then, what do we make of it? Do I have a bias that I carry forward as I read the history? Am I aware of that? And is it based on a belief that I have thought mistakenly is truth? And we don't really talk about that. And yet we claim somehow that masonry is this costume piece. I'm a better man because I dress like one, because I associate with them. And that when I'm around them, I strive to be better than I was. Is it belief or truth or how? And I'm not saying this to be off-putting. I'm saying that unlike other people, my life is limited. There will be a day coming. Well, it's coming closer and closer. Where I'll be assessing and looking at what's going on around me. And I sure hope that I haven't been misleading myself, that I've been square with myself, that I can answer the questions that will be put to me frankly and that I will be proud of my accomplishments without being absorbed by my pride. And how like this, or unlike this, was that master, that master that was given to us, that was sent, this sent to assist with the building of the temple, as history teaches us, this young fellow, Hiram Abiff, and the lineage. And of course, we wanted to do a deep dive and connect him and ourselves with the deepest, deepest root of our history, spiritual history. And what is wrong? To be honest with you, brethren, I like the magic. I don't always want to look behind the curtain to see how the magician is doing it. But I know? Yeah, I know. Just like you, I know. You don't saw the lady in half. But it's such a wonderful illusion. It's like, how does he do? How did you? Thank you for sitting in with us again this week. And for the people that have tuned in by hook or crook, or whether it's VPN, I'm thrilled, absolutely thrilled that the listeners were ticking off more of the nations of the world. Not so many around from the continent of Africa, not so many, and only a few from South America, but China, my goodness, it's such a wonderful, and New Zealand, to think that we can connect that far away. I hope you're doing, truly hope that you're doing well. The life around here is has its challenges, and described as living in with a great many privileges in a very beautiful place, and we do. However, we're aware that it is a struggle, and for more accountability, and we're able to achieve that even now. You know, we have protests going on, but they're not out of control. So it's protests that we can handle, like the protests in your countries, your nations. So whether we're looking at the 21st century influences, I think that we are progressing. And the fact, I like to think, maybe I'm wrong, but the fact that you're tuning into our program here is testament to that. It's something is changing, something is happening. Anyway, I look forward to having you join us next week, and I hope that you will commit those random acts of kindness and enjoy what there is. Life's beautiful, but it's short.